Hey there, welcome to Podmass. Are you ready? Let's hang out. It's Podmass. Podmass is like the advent calendar of podcasting traditions that was started by some podcaster somewhere who recognized that during the holiday season there were a lot of people tuning in. This is mostly because we're traveling and dealing with family and other crap we don't want to deal with, but most recently because so many of us have been stuck at home with the pandemic. And so Modern Witch is joining the festivities this year by dropping an episode every day between Yule and the New Year. That's like 11 episodes of Modern Witch. And I don't know what it says about you that you're tuning in to a bunch of witches for holiday cheer, but whatever, it's cool. I mean, come on in, no judgment. Again, it's Podmass, and you're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
What is that? It's a little bag made from the skin of a toad.
Does it matter? She's tampering in dark sided stuff!
Yet in our own supremely rational time, there has been a dramatic rebirth of the ancient arts of witchcraft.
You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast with Devin Hunter.
And welcome back to the Modern Witch Podcast. This is Podmass. This should be technically, I think, day 7. However, I got sick. I totally woke up on Monday and I just felt horrible. And I have spent basically the last 3 days in bed. I did go this morning to get a COVID test, everybody knows, and yes, I am vaccinated, but it's been a really just gross couple of days. So I'm here. I'm feeling well enough to get in front of the mic again and at the very least continue our festivities, because most of this doesn't actually include me speaking currently, so it's great. And there's interviews and stuff that I really wanted to share with you that are just like waiting to be released. So here we go, right? No more waiting. Although I am going to warn you, I'm just going to start dropping, just so we can get caught up. Every like 12 hours, I'm going to drop an episode until I can get caught up. So check your feeds, check your Podmass feeds, because it's Podmass. This episode is brought to you by the fine folks over at Modern Witch University. Once again, I may or may not have something to do with that. You can find out more by going to modernwitchuniversity.com or just modernwitch.com. On today's episode, we are going to have part 2 of our Best Of episode, and you're going to have 3 different segments from 3 actually of some of my favorite shows. First one is just a small section from the Black Rose episode that we did, and then we go into a segment from one of the Michelle Balanger episodes, and then we follow it up with a snippet from the episode where Chris Oropello and Tara Lynn McGuire came on and we talked about Tradcraft. It was a really good episode. These are all good things today. So welcome back to Podmass. So sorry for the delay, but the show must go on. And here we are. All right, so I'll see you on the flip side with some Modern Witch Best Of. Thanks for tuning in.
In developing the witch power. And what I found is fairy and the magic that's been influenced by fairy is all about psychic diagnostics. It's all about using these tools so that you can better yourself, you can empower yourself, you can take all that negative energy and do something with it. And so I really feel that these two witchcraft traditions coming together is just this really beautiful thing. But I want to explain why we're doing it. I want to talk about why on earth we would choose to kind of blend our level ones together, why we would choose to add American folk magic to the tradition. When, you know, I think when people think of witchcraft, we tend to have these very preconceived notions about what witchcraft is and what witchcraft traditions are. And here we are doing something really unique. Storm, in this process, as a teacher, as you're looking at taking, like I said, a lot of your own class material that you and your community have been working with for years now, and you're adding it to, you know, this new stuff that, you know, like I'm bringing to the table and Chaz is bringing to the table, how do you feel this is actually going to benefit the person who's coming to study with Black Rose witchcraft?
Well, I think initially the reason that it will benefit people is that we are able to draw from many different perspectives. And that was actually one of the things for me that I felt that this was just a natural progression, you know, from my work in fairy tradition. You know, fairy is somewhat different than what most people might think of as witchcraft. You know, most people have this idea of witchcraft as being, you know, strictly based in European pagan traditions. You know, this came over from England and the British Isles. Fairy tradition is American traditional witchcraft. You know, fairy tradition started here in the United States. You know, this is a separate strain of witchcraft altogether from Wicca. And so as part of the history and the lore of fairy tradition, things like hoodoo and conjure work, other types of folk magic, were definitely already part of our spiritual DNA, so to speak. And so bringing these different strains of magic and the craft together, for me, is just the natural evolution of the work in fairy tradition, because that's really been the value of fairy tradition from the get-go, one of experimentation. Certainly honoring our roots, honoring the traditions that have gone before. But one of the things about fairy tradition is that our tradition, everything that is shared between all lineages and all initiates, is so small. The tradition is actually so small when it comes to material. All the material that people will find, like on the internet or in published books, that's basically stuff that people have created on their own. We are a bardic tradition. We are a tradition that really encourages creative expression, personal connection with the divine. Those are values that I find to be, well, of value. And those are the things that I want to promote, you know, in, you know, new millennium witchcraft, so to speak. So to bring these things together and offer them in one cohesive whole, to me, it's not even a separate thing, really, from my work in fairy tradition, which is why it was very easy for me to kind of take my first year material from Blue Rose and basically just kind of redo it in a slight way and package it as Black Rose. And then also, I think bringing in other types of witchcraft, you know, like your Diana, your Cult of Diana, you know, material, your own Wiccan material that you've brought together, and the tradition of sacred fires that you have created. I think that these are really important things to bring together, because now we can offer people a wider spectrum of experiences within the container of the craft. So for me, this is all very exciting. You know, I think that this really increases the quality, you know, of what is being offered, you know, in terms of witchcraft training, whether it's in person or online. Mm-hmm. Usually one of the things that I have found is that often individual traditions of the craft will be very strict within their own religious framework. And, you know, they will teach the craft strictly within that particular framework. And then you're not really allowed to go outside, you know, of that framework. And something with Black Rose is that it is really stressing the personal connection. Obviously, we have a particular framework that we're working in, but we're also encouraging people to experiment and to maybe try things on their own. This is something that has been very prominent in how I teach Blue Rose. You know, I definitely give particular exercises, things that were traditionally handed to me, things that I have created. I want the students to work with them as given. But then at the same time, I also encourage people to experiment. Okay, well, now you've tried this exercise, you know, 6, 7, 8 times, you know, in this particular format. But what works for you? What do you feel doesn't work for you? Let's talk about that. Maybe we could tweak it. You know, I think that that is really what is necessary in terms of bettering the craft. One particular exercise or approach is not going to work for everyone. And one of the things that I have found is that there are ways for us to come together to create a better witchcraft. You know, I want to honor the traditions that we have been brought into. I want to honor the wisdom of our ancestors and what they have given us. But the minute that we believe that our teachers and our ancestors had all of the answers, then really I think that we've cut ourselves off from learning how to do anything better. And I strongly feel that our job here as witches, as warlocks in the 21st century, our job is to better the craft. And that's what Black Rose aims to do.
One of the things that I know I'm just really happy about in my life is that I was able to find a group of people, meaning you and, you know, you and Chaz, who were very inspiring when it came to the concept of being an engineer of your own magic. And, you know, I know that was a Victorism, Victor Anderson. It actually, today we're recording on his birthday.
Yes, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Victor. This is for you. you know, I loved this concept that we need to be engineers of our own magic, that that is the purpose, that is the point. And, you know, you hit upon some really important things for me as a witch, this concept of there isn't just one way. And, you know, we have to, you know, one thing, if you listen to the show, you hear me say all the time is, you know, we need to stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, not in their footsteps. And I feel like this is helping to really generate some new fresh concepts and ideas within the witchcraft communities, and to see where the future might bring. That's really exciting. So I want to talk real quick about the actual process here, because let's say someone wants to come in and they're interested in Black Rose. They've been to the website, blackrosewitchcraft.com, and they've been able to kind of poke around and get some feels for things. But let's talk about the process. Let's talk about what exactly, you know, this is going to entail, what they're going to get, and what happens after their year and a day training is over. Okay. So it's 13 months. It's not quite a year and a day. It's a little longer than that. but let's talk about, so after that is done and set with, at 13 months, what happens? I mean, let's talk about it. Let's set it up. So I'm somebody who's interested in Black Rose Witchcraft. I go to the website, blackrosewitchcraft.com. I sign up for classes. What am I going to expect?
Okay. So first off, you know, we've set it up to where you will pay $25 a month. And then again, as you mentioned, that's for 13 months. And what you're going to get is there are 13 monthly themes. And then within those months, there are 4 weeks worth of lessons that you'll receive. And so those lessons are going to take some different forms. There's going to be some written material that is sent out in PDF format. And this is something, obviously, Devin, that you've been working really hard on, making it beautiful, kind of in the style of your beautiful, beautiful magazine. I hate to even call it a magazine because it's not a magazine. It really is a beautiful book of shadows, you know, the Modern Witch magazine, Modern Witch Journal. And so this is definitely an aesthetic that that you are bringing in, you know, to Black Rose. So you'll get this beautiful PDF material. You could print that out. You could put that in your book of shadows. But you're also going to get podcasts. We're definitely going to have recorded discussions in which we're talking about the monthly themes and hashing out some of these ideas. And there's also going to be different exercises and trance journeys, both in PDF format, but also in MP3 format. You know, I am in the process of recording a bunch of guided trance journeys and MP3 rituals that people will perform. And so this will happen for 13 months. The 13th and final month, for those people who have made it, you know, through all of the work for the year, will actually then be eligible for a long distance initiation into the craft, in which we are actually going to awaken the witch power, you know, in the individual. And this is going to be something that we will do over Skype. And this is something that I have found to be effective. I've experimented with this before, both through witchcraft and my work in fairy tradition, but also through my work with Reiki. You know, that was something that had really kind of been turned on to me several years ago. I received a long distance Reiki attunement in blue fire Reiki. And that was something that really kind of just rocked my world, you know, at the time. I really was not expecting to have the intense palpable experience that I did over a long distance Reiki attunement. And yet I did. It was actually more powerful than some of the in-person Reiki attunements that I had received, you know, up until that point. And so these are all tools and ideas that we have been able to bring together to create this new format in order to really focus on the quality of the training for the student. We definitely wanted to make sure that if we were going to do this, we wanted to do it right. This is not leaving anything out. You know, I know that there's been some people that I know in some other traditions and what have you who might teach the craft online, but what they teach online is different than what they teach the people that they teach in person. And that's definitely not the route that we wanted to go. We wanted to make sure that if we were going to be teaching long distance, that we were actually doing it in such a way in which we could get to know the people, you know, involved. I know that that's been an argument before. And this is really something that we have been pretty successful with. You know, I have a good group of people in Blue Rose who I do know very well, you know, whether that just be through numerous encounters on Skype or maybe through having them come out and visit me. I've had a few Blue Rose retreats in which people have flown in from all over the country and all over the world, you know, to come and visit and share some face-to-face time. I do think that that can be a very important part of building a community. And those are definitely things that we have been thinking about in regards to Black Rose, you know. So definitely we wanted to make sure that if we were going to be doing this, that we wanted to do it right, that we were able to create a space in which a high quality of training was available to people, whether they were in person here in our own backyard or whether they were far flung across the globe. And I'm very excited to say that we've been able to do just that.
So for me, what I'm really excited about is the opportunity to what happens after this 13-month training. What we're actually doing here, because obviously, Storm, you have a lot of people who are interested in studying with you, and your community's gotten quite large, and I've got a lot of people who've been wanting to study with me, and I haven't been doing that because I wanted to take care of, you know, things within the local group here.
Right.
And so now that we're kind of through that wall, we're through that point, and we've got these people who are interested in studying online, we're able to take our communities, and right out the gate, folks, there are going to be over 50 people in our Black Rose community right out the gate.
Oh, easy.
So you're not going to be alone. So it's not like it's a trickle in kind of a thing. You're automatically walking into an incredible community of people who are so helpful because they're just like you. They're witches who are learning and they want to be part of a greater discussion. And so we have this incredible setup with forums on the Mystic Dream Academy, which is hosting our Black Rose work. And you know, I'm really excited about that. Once you're in, so you'll have access to those things. And then after this gives us let's take a step back here. This gives Storm, myself, and Chaz the ability to work with people, get to know them a little bit better before we actually invite them to become part of the bigger, you know, kind of the feeder groups here. So one of the opportunities you'll have after this, if everything is copacetic and you go through that work and you feel, let's say, inspired to go maybe study fairy with Storm, you'll have the opportunity to possibly do that. And that's a really important thing because it doesn't just stop after the 13 months. It's not like, you know, hey, you're going to get in there and then you're just done. You'll always have access to the community, and then you'll have the ability to go in and study fairy. You'll have the ability to come and join Coven Aradia, which is, you know, the group within Sacred Fires that practices the craft specifically. And so you're in a position when you are studying in the Black Rose School of Witchcraft to actually build a foundation for yourself, for your community, that is going to be there for a long friggin' time, people, if you want it. And I think that's the glory of this, is that between you and me, I say 50. That's actually a really small estimate. and I'm really excited about what's going to happen next. So can we talk a little bit before we go on our next break about that process? So let's say they get through that 13 months. They feel really inspired, let's say, to go study fairy. How does that happen? What's going to happen next?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that they certainly don't have to. You know, the 13-month curriculum for Black Rose as it stands now is complete within itself. You know, it basically gives a complete 101 training in the craft. Obviously, it's going to be somewhat different than what people have been exposed to specifically in Wicca and most published material. It draws from many different inspirations and sources. And so if that's all that the student wants, then that's fine. Then that's all that they would really need. That would give them the tools that they would need in order to perhaps then administer to their own communities, perhaps locally, mm-hmm. you know, if they wanted to start their own covens, whether that be, you know, a Black Rose style coven, you know, or perhaps just taking the tools, you know, that they learned, you know, in the Black Rose training and then applying that to their own, you know, traditions and covens back home. So certainly there's no requirement, you know, or expectation that people are going to move on, you know, and train with us in our specific traditions. But that is available. You know, that was something that we really were very clear on that we wanted to make, was that this is not in addition necessarily to training, perhaps with me in Blue Rose, that this is actually part of that training, you know, in Blue Rose, just as the Black Rose is part of your Sacred Fires mm-hmm. training. Mm-hmm. Originally, my Blue Rose practitioner level, my level one, was based on a 2-year curriculum. And now my Blue Rose practitioner level will only have to be 1 year because the first year has been satisfied by Black Rose. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't increase the amount of time, you know, that the student would need to study with me. In fact, it actually makes it a little bit more accessible because for that first year, you're basically getting a discounted rate because the way that we have set it up is that through Black Rose in that first year training, there's actually a lot of fairy material that I have in there, as well as material from other traditions, as we've spoken of before. but that first year is transmitted more, like I said, with PDFs, with MP3s. These are things that people can kind of do maybe at their own pace. It requires less one-on-one involvement with myself, with the other teachers, although we are making a space to where that will be available, mm-hmm. you know, to students should they want to sign up for that. But then once they finish that 13-month curriculum, if, for example, they wanted to move on into Blue Rose and actually wanted to study fairy tradition with me, I will have had over a year in which I have been able to kind of see this person work, you know, to some degree. I've seen their involvement on the community forum. Maybe we've had some chats with the online, you know, group chats. So I'll have a little bit more of a filter, you know, and I'll be able to determine whether or not this individual is actually suited, you know, for fairy tradition. Because as you know, our particular specific traditions are not necessarily suited for the masses. Mm-hmm. You know, and so this is one way in which we can still give people the tools that they would need in order to better their magic, to better their craft, to deepen their spiritual practice. But then perhaps they just want to move on and do their own thing after that. That's totally fine. But then we could continue onward with Blue Rose, with Sacred Fires, you know, wherever that person's drive leads them, where their inspiration leads them, there's going to be something available. So we're very excited about bringing Black Rose, you know, to the larger witchcraft community. It's going to have less religious dogma and more of a modern approach to magic, to psychicism, to folk magic, bringing all of these things together in a way that is a viable spiritual practice, but one that is not restrictive in terms of dogma. So we're all very excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, folks, thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned because you're not done yet. We're going to come right back after this break with Storm Fairy Wolf. We're going to continue to talk about Black Rose witchcraft. We'll be right back after this break.
Making this up, and I'm like, no, that's actually what it's more like. It's a lot more like going in, feeling things out, connecting strange dots, and then wondering if you're crazy. Like, that's so much of what the actual experience is. So do you feel like, as an investigator, we are the current field, the way things are now, do you feel that we're headed in a better direction than we were like 10 years ago? Because I feel like 10 years ago, it was all about provocation. It was all about ridding environments of spiritual energies versus teaching people to deal with them or teaching people to, you know, kind of work with those things. And I feel like we're seeing changes like that now, which is awesome. But I feel like you have a bigger, a better pulse or a better, you know, touch on the pulse of what's going on.
There's two points I want to cover with that. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, however long it was with Paranormal State, my biggest comeuppance with working with the show was realizing that the people who designed the show, not the Paranormal Research Society, not the cast, but the producers who pitched the show and who ran the show, didn't believe in shit. They didn't expect this to be real. They were honestly shocked when they finally were asking us to fake stuff that we refused because they assumed all of it was fake. And what I have noticed over time is, while I think that there are still those elements within the paranormal shows, where the people who are putting them together really don't, they just see it as entertainment. They don't expect there to be anything real. There are many more people who are genuine believers, genuine practitioners, who are at least educated about it, who see this not just as entertainment, but as a legitimate experience. And they do make an effort to convey that and to do so genuinely. And my greatest spark of hope right now is seeing Hellier. I hope against all hope that Hellier and that it inspires a renaissance in how people approach paranormal shows. I know that paranormal television, especially when it was starting out, like straddled this weird space between reality TV and the horror genre. And again, a lot of the producers, they're going for jump scares. They're not necessarily going for genuine stuff. When they want witches, they fall to stereotypes and tropes. And so they know a guaranteed titillating event is demonic possession. So everything's going to be a demon because that's going to get the ratings. When at this point we've had so many people watching the shows that, and they've educated themselves. Hollywood especially really underestimates the general intelligence of the audience. And while some days the people who pass along Facebook memes do make me wonder whether or not they're accurate, but most everybody's dumb.
Right. Right. Yeah, totally.
You know, the fans that I interact with, the people who watch these shows, who talk to me, they know when they're seeing something that's fake. And they know when they're seeing something that's been glossed over or polished up or prettied up. And what they really want is something that is closer to their actual experiences. And I think that we are finally at a point where the production companies realize that too. I was on Haunted Salem Live, and the cool thing that I got to overhear behind the scenes was the buzz, was listening to the producer people have a very different attitude than I was used to about what they were willing to present and how they framed the dialogue of this information. So I think we are moving toward a pretty neat time. And I think we wouldn't be here if we hadn't been kind of raising the bar and encouraging dialogue and having some shows that were frankly really fake and start to just grate on people because they were fake. Our feedback does count. Like if you're watching a show and you just think it's a bunch of crap, I don't think that like ranting on Facebook is a good answer, but actually reach out to the folks who've put the show on and let them know what you think.
You're easily amused.
Modesty is one of my girlish qualities.
Okay, so Nephilim. So I just have a couple of questions, and I'm going to... You can answer to the best you can and as most comfortably as you can. So don't feel put on the spot.
Okay.
But I want to talk about Nephilim in a more literal sense, because I feel like we are, you know, we're often going through and identifying spiritual types and these different things, but we keep it all very philosophical and we keep it all unverified gnosis, which is great. And I think that's should be the driving factor for everything. But, talking about Nephilim as actual beings that are in existence or maybe were in existence is something that a lot of people are uncomfortable with. And they especially at least in my view. And I'd like to kind of, I don't know, just kind of break that can open a little bit more and talk about Nephilim as spiritual energies or spirits that we can communicate with, that are impacting us and have some sort of sway over humanity. And so I wanted to ask you, A, do you think the Nephilim are real in the sense that they still are having influence over humanity? They still are part of our existence?
I think the Nephilim, the Watcher Angels, or Rin, whatever you want to call them, are real, exist, continue to linger both as energies, as disembodied beings, and occasionally as beings that take up human flesh to interact and teach from a different perspective.
What's their purpose, do you think?
Oh, I think some have forgotten what that purpose is because being stuck here for so long is a little confusing. But primarily to teach, to challenge, and to transform. If they are the many born watchers and wanderers, they are catalysts of wisdom, of change.
And from your perspective, are these beings that we should be afraid of?
No. Now, that's not to say that they aren't dangerous. Sometimes challenging and difficult beings. I know we avoid the word angel because it's been very co-opted by Christianity, this concept of these beings that are that sometimes can take human faces but are other. And especially among Wiccans, pagans, and practitioners of witchcraft, saying angel or demon, there's this fear that it requires a belief in damnation and redemption in a kind of heaven and hell that is very Christian. And that's absolutely not the case. These beings and our records of these beings are so much older than Christianity. They're older than Judaism. They go back to the very core of Western civilization, at least. There are literally moments where I will start to try to explain something and my words will just lock up. Like, I will literally have to like scramble in my brain to figure out some way to kind of like circumvent saying it as directly. And which is why I've done so much that art that I've done, like my album Blood of Angels with the title song Blood of Angels, which tells a story, which is something that ties in with everything else that I write. And my fiction series, which also tells a story about these tribes of angels that are born and reborn in different ways and are here and are in some cases trying to figure themselves out and others all following their own agendas. And they are deathless and immortal, even though they pick up different human lives over time in order to help steer history and help steer people and watch and protect and sometimes fuck it up along the way, because being here in this particular incarnated plane is by its nature sort of screwed up. It is a very real part of my belief system and my tradition. I hope that the Keprians aren't going to wig out about that. I think it's about time for everybody to start talking about it openly, because at this point, after talking with people in the fairy tradition and folks who practice in different witchcraft traditions and the vampire community and all of it, finding that this is the dirty little secret of pretty much every group that I've ever been drawn to because they feel real. Like, they, from listening to them, from seeing their magic, from watching them practice, I recognize a way of perceiving the world that is much more genuine, that has a greater depth. I would say we shouldn't be afraid of our truths simply because we've been raised in a culture that tells us that angels and demons are the province of Christianity, which we find not merely hypocritical, but frequently offensive.
Was discovering myself, I would say again, you know, like we do in witchcraft, we just kind of keep finding ourselves over and over again. During one of those moments, I had that kind of clarification presented that, you know, there's the folk magic that's just regional and that has everything to do with where you're at and what you got. And then there's those other things that are going to be more ceremonial. And I think that's one of the, for me, that's one of the beautiful things about traditional witchcraft is that it, you know, it's a fusion of those two things. At least I find it to be more of the case than what I find in like Wicca or, you know, my other type of training that I did. So
your show is very speaking of traditional witchcraft, your show is very much so steeped in that. I mean, it's definitely the you know, the color that's kind of, you know, glinting on everything, which is beautiful. But I want to kind of get into this with you, because I've heard some of your opinions on things if there's a subject, but I haven't really gotten to pick your mind and your brain about what exactly traditional witchcraft is and how it differs from those other things. I know I've got plenty of opinions myself, but traditional witchcraft, let's define that from your perspective.
Okay. Traditional witchcraft can be a few different types of things, because you have cultural practices, and then you also just have like traditions of witchcraft. So you have things like Robert Cochrane and Clan of Tubal Cain and Sabbatic witchcraft and Andrew Chumley and things along in those lines. But then you also have things like hoodoo or Brakari. Or just things that are more culturally based. So it's like two different types, two veins of traditional witchcraft. You can talk about it as a cultural practice, or you can talk about it as a magical tradition, you know, umbrella. We tend to look at it both ways, because I have a heavy, heavy background in folk magic. Chris has always been more from the ceremonial side of things. So we come at it from both types of perspectives. And we also want a very well-rounded perspective of things too, because there are a lot of people now, or just not now, there just are a lot of people who will talk about traditional witchcraft only in regards to, say, the traditions, you know, the 1734s, the Clan of Tubal Cain, the what have yous on that end of things. You could throw Wicca in there. Some people do, like BTW type of Wicca. And some people, very few people actually even stop to think about the cultural aspects of it too. So we want it to be respectful of things that would fall under those types of headings, and also just be intelligent about it. Because those things do exist, whether or not anyone wants to acknowledge them, it's still actually a legitimate, functional, logical side of this. It's just, it is what it is. They're there. And they tend to get ignored a lot. So we want to keep that in the general eyesight, I guess, of the community, to have it out there on the table.
Well, then I think our approach to traditional witchcraft in general is very animistic, and I almost wouldn't classify it as being neo-pagan technically, because it doesn't have that harvest aspect. It doesn't have that earth-centeredness to it. And me personally, I take influence from Robert Cochrane in a lot of his criticisms about some of the modern witchcraft movements being fertility cults.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, that we don't need fertility cults nowadays. We don't need them. We're not farmers.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, that's absolutely, that's kind of where we're coming from in a lot of ways. So
And I think that's one of, go ahead.
And, but at the same time, we still want to maintain the connection with the land, because we're not an agricultural society. But we still need to maintain that connection with the land, to be respectful of it, to be mindful of where we live.
Yeah.
There are forces there. There are spirits there in the land. It's all part of the witchcraft.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way to separate those, but we don't treat it as venerating the harvest type of thing. It's getting to the spirit that's behind that stuff.
Yeah, it's getting into the spirit of the land, spirit of place. So, like, there are, you know, like Tara has two gardens that she runs every year. So three gardens. What am I talking about? Three gardens. I think of the two as being the same thing.
Yeah.
So there is that aspect where you touch base with the earth in that way. But it comes across very different to me than how the reverence for the earth existed for me as a Wiccan. So it's definitely a different feel, a different vibe. You know, because through being animists, we acknowledge the earth. We have a genus loci altar, and we also have an ancestor altar in our home. So
we have altars everywhere.
Yeah, one of the things that is definitely like fucking pagans, what the hell kind of thing for me is this like forced. What was that term? Wiccanate privilege or whatever that was rolling around. But that's totally, it's a thing. Let's be real.
Yeah,
and
it
it's
is.
Annoying as
it
fuck.
Totally is.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't come to witchcraft because I was looking to commune with a goddess. I'm very happy that I ended up having a relationship with one that's very near and dear to me, but that wasn't what I came here for. And I definitely, I live in California now. So seasons
are there meaningless.
Not really a, and then there's the other things like, you know, if you grow up like on the East Coast, if you're going to draw water or something like sort of those energies, you're not going to go to the West. The ocean's on the other side. You know, there's there's things like that that I just always felt were trappings of you know, that whitewashing that was done and this. A lot of people, I think, trying to get comfortable and force things into a model based off of what they thought, you know, our pagan ancestors did.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of this crazy shit. And it, when you take a step back and you actually look at it, you can just rip it all to shreds. I mean, like every little bit. I mean, even the Sabbats. The names of the Sabbats, that didn't come up until 1960 something. So, like, that wasn't a thing, you know? Like, let's be – so there's a lot of that that I – as a witchcraft teacher, I get really aggravated about that. And that's basically what led me to just do my own thing and, you know, start Sacred Fires. Because we could make it about you and your relationship to spirit. You know, spirits. And to me, that's the most important thing as an occultist, is that we're going through, we're, you know, engaging spirits, we're receiving little bits of initiation and, you know, getting the secrets. And then those are our secrets. Those are our mysteries. But I have a hard time with pagan, like the word pagan. I have a hard time kind of feeling like my work is pagan because of what you just said. I'm totally there with you on that. So how does this translate for the Black Tree Coven? For y'all.
Well, we look at things in a very individualistic manner, because it's all about where you are at. It's all about where your feet are at the moment. So with us, we live in Southern New Jersey, and we live very, very close to this particular Pinelands Reserve that's 1.1 million acres of almost untouched Pinelands Reserve called the Pine Barrens. And it's a very interesting place to be. The feeling that is there can get very intense. And I grew up in part of the Pine Barrens, and I've always lived pretty close to it. And so our witchcraft and our spirits are heavily tied into that area. But if we were to live in Delaware or Portland or, you know, somewhere in the middle of the country, God help me.
We would have to find that.
We would have to find that land. So when we've been talking to people about it, because there's, you know, we've had some contact with people who are nowhere near us who are interested in Black Tree. And we've been trying to figure out how to approach it like this, because we're not opposed to having like long distance coven members. But at the same time, if we're in New Jersey,
more so traditional members, but
tradition members, if we're in New Jersey and someone is in Alaska, you know, how are they going to relate to what we're doing? So the way that we look at it, it's very mutable. It's very changeable, even in our own. Like we have a moon system, just basically based on the full moons and the dark moons, because we don't celebrate Sabbats. We don't celebrate the Wheel of the Year is what I should say. We do have, there's two Sabbats, but we use it in a very different manner.
Oh yes, girl. Oh yes.
A little bit of different Sabbat going on there.
Yeah.
But so we have moons and we have a moon system, and it's all based on what the land is doing near here. Now, one of the moons we had before was Storm Moon. And the 1 year we had, that was in August. And in the 1 year we had a real shitty, shitty storm in July where the tornado touched down like less than 2 miles away from our apartment and we didn't have power for 3 days. Mm. That was July, not August, or actually that was June that that happened and it was nowhere near August. So we started talking about like how these moons may change. And like 1 year there was a lot of locust activity. So I was like, well, maybe it should be locust moon. And then we just realized the moons aren't fixed. They're going to change. Mm-hmm. Someone who would be interested in Black Tree, who was in a different part of the country or a different part of the world, the moons are going to be their moons.
Right.
So yeah. it's
and just reflective of what of they're doing, they where they're living, what's going on, where right. they're at, what defines that time period for them.
Yeah. That's their work. That's yeah. their mystery to it's, discover. Yeah, they mystery. Do that. But we definitely have a foundation of the tradition itself. Like there's definitely something there. There are definitely still core mysteries to it. Mm-hmm. There's definite core, I don't want to say teachings because that just sounds like guru and that's not what I mean. But there's just definite lessons. There's
pillars.
Pillars.
Yeah. Pillars. Yeah. Very good. That's an awesome
thank you.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things exist within the tradition. Mm-hmm. So when we first started writing all of this and we had that realization, it was a little like it shook us because that wasn't something we had really anticipated happening. Yeah. And all of this journey has been just us discovering how we've changed, how everything else has changed around us, how we're looking to define ourselves, how we stand in relation to the rest of the community, the rest of the world, to each other. Yeah.
It's constant exploration. It's a constant development.
Yeah. And you had mentioned the whole thing with the word pagan. At the same time, if someone on the outside were to ask me what I was, I would say pagan because it's mm-hmm. the easy term.
Oh yeah.
You know, we're still part of our local pagan pride festival. We're on the board for our area for it. I still very much support the things that they do, but it's hard as a traditional witch to not really have a place in that like it was because mm-hmm. we're not a religion. We right. have no gods. So how do you fit into that type of thing? And it's not even an answer that we really even have yet.
Right.
Because again, it's constantly evolving. We're constantly discovering. I don't think we'll ever actually let go of the word pagan, though, because it is a community that we're tightly woven into.
Oh, yeah.
just yeah. ourselves, you know, individually, but also just ourselves, what we're doing as a concept is woven yeah. into paganism.
And it's yeah. not a slight. Not
oh, not at know, all.
It's just that we recognize that it's not a word that entirely reflects what we're doing, but it's the closest thing we have. And you know, we're just trying to maintain that respect
right.
to the term itself and the use of it.
I would also rather use pagan than neo-pagan. I yeah. will say that. I never say mm-hmm. neo-pagan. That word just hits my teeth on edge.
Yeah.
But pagan at like it's at its innermost, you know, definition of the word, I still have a tiny little bit of identification towards. Tiny, tiny bit.
Yeah.
Just keep the gods and goddesses away from me. I'll be cool. And the fairies.
And the fairies. Oh. And the fairies.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, I totally get that. For me, I'm kind of at that stage where I can't be divorced from paganism. I mean, I have so many wonderful connections in paganism and the people, and there are communities that I've been a part of for, you know, over a decade. I could never imagine, you know, not hanging out right. with because of something stupid like, you know, an ideological like a difference. Definition.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. So I'm totally there with you. I just, you know, I think as I'm looking around what I've seen, and I think it's really beautiful, is that I think witches right now are, at least within paganism, I think there tends to be this kind of, we're stepping up a little bit more to kind of claim our own identity. And yeah. I've really been proud of that, you know, mm-hmm. not just from that perspective of like, hey, look what we can do. Yeah. Because witches don't tend to agree on a whole lot, you know, that's just not usually a thing.
Yeah.
So any level of, you know, agreement and head nodding is always a good thing as far as I'm concerned. So one thing I did want to ask is, who are your favorite authors when it comes to traditional witchcraft? Because I think pop culture and pop witchcraft, you know, we can go to a library and we can just, you know, pick off a book off the shelves and we can get a pretty good idea of what, you know, the general practices are. You can go to a bookstore and you can get most of that stuff. But when it comes to this particular vein of witchcraft, it's kind of hard to get material on, and it's either really expensive or it's exclusive. Like, there's only X amount of prints that are done. And I'll also tell you that with the exclusion of a few people, I found most of the traditional witchcraft authors out there to be quite impalatable when it comes to manners sometimes. And so I've just had this like love of these books, but at the same time, you know, as a fan of these books, I've had a hard time getting access to the authors and you know, and all of that good stuff. And so I'm always curious when there are other people who have a library, as to, you know, what books am I missing, what books should we be reading out there if we're interested in traditional witchcraft,
specifically traditional witchcraft. There's not a whole lot of them, though.
Not specifically.
I mean, I think the first one that comes to mind is Gemma Gary. So I was really thankful that I'd be able to speak with her on this show.
Yeah.
So jelly.
I mean, Nigel Pearson has some good stuff. I, you know, like you're saying, a lot of the books are tough to find. Yeah.
You have to back into it. You have to look at the types of books on a slant. Because you're going to be looking at not just specifically primers on traditional witchcraft in and of itself, but where traditional witchcraft comes from. So you're going to be looking at folklore books and herbalism books.
That's why I said traditional witchcraft specifically.
I know. But, and then, right, I'm adding to it.
And then you're adding to it.
I love it.
But you're going to be going in those directions as well. So we have built up this semi-ridiculous library of books over the past few years. I don't even want to think about the money that's been spent on them, because every once in a while, one of us goes, the hell with it. I'm buying now. Usually me.
The thing is, a lot of these books, if you don't get them when you can,
they'll be like $500.
Yeah, you won't be able to get them.
Like Andrew Chumley books.
I'm really lucky.
I don't want to do like the pirate ebook thing on it, but I'm just oh my god, why are you $1,000?
Yeah, I got really lucky when I stumbled into Chumley, because I'm polyamorous. So there's three of us, and they were together for a very long time before I came along. So they had a library and, you know, all these good things. So when I moved in, they already had a copy of the Azawisha. And they never talked about it. To me, it's like one of the most beautiful grimoires that's ever been written, but I'm a big Chumley fan. But you know, we've got all these books, and they were like showing me, you know, RJ Stewart and these other, like, you know, years later, I go to do we have a copy of this thing? And they're like, oh, actually, yeah. And they just pull it. Oh, my God. You know how expensive this book is. And then once I started the kick up, and they were super cool, and they had connections all over, we were able to find out like where to go to get certain copies of books. I mean, we have a bookstore and we can't sell these books. You know, so I mean, that's how difficult they are to get. So I'm lucky I have, like, sitting right next to me, I have four Chumbleys. And the little ones, but I have four Chumbleys,
four little Chumbleys,
and they're just kind of my, like, the pride and joy of my library, aside from my books, of course. But, you know, they are, I mean, I just couldn't, because when I stumbled on the Chumbley material, it was like a witchcraft revelation for me. It was, you know how people say, oh, well, I was looking for something and I didn't know what it was. And then I found the craft. It was like that all over again for me. In the way of, because I had been doing what I do for a living, you get very used to, you know, there's a script. I'm a professional witch. Every day I'm meeting with people, selling them herbs or, you know, candle or whatever, and helping them through their problems. And so there's a script, and everything gets very blah, you know, it gets very bland, very, very beige. And that's what things had kind of become. So I went through this little bit of a crisis and kind of, you know, maybe I just need to not
to be a public witch anymore. Maybe I just need to go just do the psychic thing and da 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 da. And then I had this whole weekend love affair with Chumbly. And I felt like I was reading the Ajoisha, and I was able to like ask this guy a question, and I felt like he was right there with me. And wow. So I was like, well, this is trippy. And I'm a medium, so I'm really about like, can I feel the spirit? Do I experience this thing? So with Chumbly, I really, really felt that. And then as I did research, and especially with the cultus of Bad Eye and the influences and the things that they were able to kind of have on us, I just, everything was new and fresh and sparkly. And it was like getting a new lover, you know? Yeah. So and it's been a couple of years, but I'm still in love with this new lover to the point where, I mean, I was able to define my practices and the things that I was teaching for years. There were words for shit, you know, and I know that that sounds silly, you know, being doing this as long as I have been. But there are people, there's something to this quintessence thing. There's something to this dream thing. There's something to this that other witches have discovered, because spirits are talking to everybody. So I know I particularly have an affinity for Chumbly. Do you have a favorite author? Like, I want to know, who are your influences? That's what I'm picking at here.
Oh, hell.
It's been so all over the place over the years. It's tough to pinpoint just one.
Because and then I'm trying to go for the historical texts, which I know isn't the answer that people are looking for.
No, if it's helpful, it's helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I like to. I don't tend to have a favorite author, but I have authors that I like to go to.
Yeah,
and they're people that I was already mentioning. I try to not have like a favorite, only because as an artist, I want to be able to rely on myself to create something original. And there's always that concern that I'm going to be subconsciously copying someone.
Oh yeah, totally.
So I try to not, I think it's just a natural thing. I don't tend to get attached to anyone in particular.
Right.
I
don't know, but at the same time I have a fondness for Emma Willoughby.
Okay.
You know, I like the Ginsberg stuff. Claude Lecateau.
Oh yeah, totally.
Claude Lecateau's books are great. And then even just beyond like author stuff, Sarah Ann Lawless's writing has been that you know, just the resonation that comes out of it.
Well, she's definitely one of the sounding boards. You know, we you know, check on. Yeah, you know, you have your list of people that you check with about certain things. You know, like the authors that
you
Tara had
this?
Just mentioned, and definitely Sarah is on that list too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then I also have, I mean, I have very outside of witchcraft completely influences. One of my, and I say this one all the time, and people get a little confused by it, but one of my biggest influences in witchcraft is William S. Burroughs. Who is,
I can
not
totally
even
see that.
See, he's not even remotely related, but it's, and I've been a William S. Burroughs fangirl for a ridiculously long time. But there's just things that concepts that he had within his writing, particularly in like the novel Naked Lunch and the city in Naked Lunch that the main character goes to, and the deviation from reality that happens, that you're never quite sure what's actually real and what's not within the story. And then he also had, you know, his cut-up style of writing, and it's very much an automatic writing type of thing. And then there's the dream machine that him and Brian Jison had designed. No, that one's not a book. It's an actual device.
Tell me more.
It was, if I remember, it's, you don't, I don't think you put it on your head. It sits on a table, and it's like a, the best way to describe it is that it's light flashing very quickly, almost like the pages of a book. And it goes into a trance state. And of course, you know, they were like, well, Burroughs was a beat writer. Jison is, we'll call him an occultist. they were always going towards like the altered states of reality, the trance states, you know, getting into that particular, brain wavelength, which the name is escaping me at the moment. And I know Chris knows it. Alpha?
You mean alpha?
For trance. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the levels of trance is alpha, but
So that type of thing has always been a heavy, heavy influence on me, even before I even knew what the words hedge witchery, hedge witch, crossing the hedge, those types of things, even before I even knew what they mm-hmm. were. That right. was the type of viewpoint that I had on accessing my witchcraft, because when I first started out, I wasn't Wiccan. I've never been Wiccan. And I was finding my own way. And on my own, I kind of figured out that doing trance things was a way to getting to where I wanted to be, mm-hmm. with witchcraft, with different ritual that I was doing. And then when I discovered Burroughs and started going through all of that stuff, it was like, oh, wait, here's other ways of doing this type of thing. And just beyond that, I have, I go into trance very, very easily. It's a concept that I had talked about with John Beckett in one of our episodes, where I see things just outside of trance, and I'm not always certain whether I'm actually seeing things, like whether mm-hmm. it's something that is legitimately there, or is it my brain doing this, or what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. Those are usually referred to as hallucinations. but I'm not quite certain whether I'm hallucinating or whether this is an experience that I'm having. It happens a lot. The veil is very, very thin for me. Mm-hmm. Which can be great in some respects and not so great in others. So from an early age with my witchcraft, it was just the automatic direction I was going, and I was more comfortable going. It's what I knew.
Mm-hmm. Did you find, just picking your little witchy brain here, because it's one of the things that I'm actually writing about right now. Did you find at a young age, because as the veil was thin, did you find that you had a particular like spirit that came to you, that has like been that ally, has been that familiar for you? Did you get that experience, or were you just kind of like going in and just raw and blind?
For a long time, it was rolling blind, and kind of blundering through stuff and trying to figure things out. There's always been certain presences that I've been aware of. And one of them I was only able to figure out fairly recently, when we were doing journey work. And then another one I figured out about, how long ago was, probably in like 2002, I figured out that one of the presences that I was always interacting with was Papa Gede. Mm-hmm. And that was around the time period that I got heavily into Haitian voodoo. I don't want to call it practice Haitian voodoo, because I wasn't initiated. It's an initiatory mm-hmm. religion. And, but at the time, I called myself a voodoo son. Mm-hmm. I have since changed viewpoints on that, because I realized how horribly appropriative I was being. I still have the relationship with Papa Gede. Mm-hmm. That's never going anywhere, I don't think. Yeah. But so he was always a factor. This other spirit was always a factor. Just for a very long time, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know how to interact with different ones, because there's an etiquette. There's definitely an etiquette. So for a while it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, blam, 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 you know, flounder around, screw everything up, get really, really mad at something's angry as hell, everything's going wrong. But there's like other things that I see, I'm not necessarily certain if they're actually spirits. I just don't know. My mm-hmm. jury is continually out on that.
All right, we made it to the end of the best of episode, at least part two of the best of episode. It's been a wild ride for the last couple of years, and it's just exciting to still be here, to still have people downloading the show and participating. It's just really cool. So lots of love from me to you. I hope you're enjoying Podmass.
And again, check your feed in about like 12 hours or so, and you're going to have another upload from me. And this time it is going to be an interview. And it's been one I've been holding on to for a minute. I got some good interviews coming to you actually for Podmas. So anyway, stay tuned. We will be back with more Podmas after a couple hours. And just to let your feed get caught up and everything else get caught up. And then we will get caught up with Podmas. Thanks for your patience once again. My name is Devin Hunter. You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast. And this has been Podmas.
There are forces at work here. Dark, incomprehensible forces.